Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. Front page. Energy. Craddock opposes pro-rationing plans and cuts. Commissioner says the RRC can use other methods. By Mella McEwen, M-M-C-E-W-E-N, at MRT.com. After weeks of considering whether to implement statewide oil production cuts for the first time in 50 years, the Railroad Commission appears poised to vote no on the issue at today's public meeting. Commission Chair Wayne Christian wrote last week in an op-ed that he would vote against plans to implement pro-rationing. And Monday, Commissioner Christy Craddock told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview she too will vote against those plans. "I believe pro-rationing isn't the thing we should be doing," she said. "It seems most of the time government agencies move slower than the market. The market seems to be correcting itself. What the agencies should do is provide regulatory certainty and, in such economic times, as much flexibility as possible to give companies time to comply with filings or paying royalties or taxes and giving them more opportunity to stay in business," Craddock said. "That will be just one of two parts of today's docket," Craddock said. While the pro-rationing question will be first and foremost issue to be discussed, she said other items will address ways the agency can work with operators. "It was important that we have these hearings on pro-rationing," she said. "There was a lot of testimony, a lot of talk, a lot of conversations. We heard from over 1,000 companies giving comments." She also appreciated receiving input from the Texas Attorney General's office, as well as guidance from the Commission's General Counsel on what could and couldn't be done in pro-rationing. "No one could have ever anticipated oil prices turning negative as they did on April 20th, Craddock said. "Everyone who has a job in the industry is going to be affected, as will those with jobs not directly tied to the industry. The challenging part is how we have a robust industry and jobs. The Commission has good rules in place that offer guidance and certainty. I know innovation has kept the industry robust." Medical Lodge transfers residents to MMH. Six MML residents were admitted Sunday and 17 expected to be admitted on Monday. By Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at MRT.com. Six residents from Midland Medical Lodge were admitted to Midland Memorial Hospital on Sunday because they have tested positive for the coronavirus or are suspected to be positive, according to MMH CEO Russell Myers. He said the hospital expected 17 more residents to be admitted on Monday. An administrator with Midland Medical Lodge said in a press release Sunday evening that residents who've tested positive and those with symptoms of the virus are being transferred to the hospital for further care. The announcement from the nursing home came hours after an administrator stated that Midland Medical Lodge officials voluntarily activated the HHSC, Texas Health and Human Services, rapid response team at the recommendation of our facility and corporate medical directors. The transfer process will continue over a 36-hour period, according to the news release. Myers said during a press briefing Monday that there are 58 known positive cases from the nursing facility, including 23 staff members and 35 residents. Some of the staff members are residents of other counties and not counted among Midland County's cases. "Our team has been working diligently to stop the spread of COVID-19 at Midland Medical Lodge," stated Carrie Powell, an administrator at Midland Medical Lodge. "This decision has not been easy, and the decision has been made for the protection of all of the current residents." Earlier Sunday, lodge officials announced the activation of the HHSC Rapid Response Team. However, Sunday, the city reported that another four residents of the lodge tested positive for coronavirus. That brought the total from the weekend, Friday through Sunday, to seven residents and one staff member. The city also reported the death of two residents from the lodge because of coronavirus complications this weekend. Midland Health Department officials said last week Texas Health and Human Services Commission had been on site at Midland Medical Lodge since April 17th. "They are working with lodge officials in regards to their current infection control procedures and their policies and their actions that they take in regards to following or not following, said Whitney Craig, Midland Health Department Health and Senior Services Manager. Meyer said the influx of patients from Midland Medical Lodge will create some challenges for the hospital and is likely to strain their available resources. If we get all 17 patients Monday, we will pretty much be at close to the maximum capacity of our medical surgical COVID unit. Should that be the case, we'll have to determine where the next unit will be to properly isolate those patients. Hospital officials do not know if the decision to transfer all residents with COVID-19 was made by lodge administrators or the HHSC. He also said he did not know if any of the residents who tested positive had previously tested negative. Caitlin Randall contributed to this report. Business. Odessa businesses reopen against Abbott's orders by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Odessa. Some businesses in Odessa not included in Phase 1 of Governor Greg Abbott's plan to restart the economy have chosen to reopen anyway. They say the decision isn't a government protest, rather they just can't afford to stay closed. Clint Gillespie, owner of the Anytime Fitness on 8th Street, opted to reopen the gym on Friday and allow patrons to use the facility. Several people could be seen entering and leaving the building on Monday and working out inside. It wasn't just about losing a couple of paychecks. We were in risk of losing everything, he said. We had really no choice, and we don't feel like we need to ask permission from the government to operate or survive. His fiance and co-owner of the Anytime Fitness location, Celeste Solis, said they applied for funding through the Federal Paycheck Protection Program and received only enough to cover their manager's salary. When asked if the gym could have waited 2 weeks to reopen after Phase 2 of Abbott's plan, which includes gyms, is expected to be implemented, Gillespie said he didn't believe gyms would be given the go-ahead to reopen at that time. Gillespie and Solis held a small rally outside the fitness center on Monday. They decorated their entrance with red, white, and blue balloons and signs that read, "All business is essential," and "Constitution trumps all." Patrons and community members gathered in the storefront, some wearing tactical gear and openly carrying rifles. Jenny Cudd, owner of Becky's Flowers and a former mayoral candidate in Midland, helped organize the rally and promoted it on social media. She said she believes Abbott's order violates discrimination laws by only allowing some businesses to reopen. The thing with freedom is somebody has always fought for our rights, and maybe this is the time that we get to do that, Cudd said. Because once your freedoms start getting taken away, you don't ever get them back. Big Daddy Zane's, a bar in West Odessa, reopened Monday against Abbott's executive orders, according to owner Gabrielle Ellison. She said they will not be adhering to the 25% capacity restriction set by Abbott for restaurants and stores allowed to reopen, and instead will be allowing patrons to enter up to 100% capacity. Ellison said she's aware what she's risking by opening, including possibly losing her business license, but said she'll be forced to close for good if she doesn't open immediately. She said she believes the coronavirus is dangerous, but not enough to justify the toll it is taking on local businesses. The economy is going to kill more people than this virus could ever think of, she said. Odessa Mayor David Turner, during a press briefing on Monday, addressed Anytime Fitness and other businesses choosing to open in violation of the governor's order. I respect their right to picket. I respect their right to go on Facebook or whatever they want. But the governor has given us an order, and if I don't enforce it, I can be sued. Devin Sanchez, a spokeswoman for the city of Odessa, said the fire marshal's office cited Anytime Fitness over the weekend after they were warned and chose to stay open. She said the owners, as well as patrons who choose to use the facility, risk being fined up to $1,000. Two patrons were given a warning on Saturday, she said. While we are empathetic to these businesses that can't open, deliberately disobeying the governor's orders is not the way to go about this, Sanchez said. Big Daddy Zane's is outside city limits, and Ector County would be responsible for citing that business, according to Sanchez. She said the county has already issued several citations. The public information officer for the Ector County Sheriff's Office did not respond to a request for information about which businesses had been cited. Ellison said that if she is cited, she will accept that consequence but stay open. "It's going to be pretty bad when they hit us when we're already down," she said. She faced more than a citation later Monday night. Ellison was arrested for reopening against Abbott's orders, and patrons who were carrying weapons also were arrested, according to a report on KOSA-TV's website. Gillespie also said citations would not stop them from opening their doors. He said he expects a legal challenge to Abbott's order eventually will make it to the Texas Supreme Court, but if not, he will hire a lawyer and fight any citations he incurs. "We're not going to take it or accept it," he said. The fire marshal's office will continue monitoring Anytime Fitness and other businesses that violate state orders, according to Sanchez. She said these businesses could be fined for each day they stay open, meaning they're risking citations of up to $1,000 a day. "While their argument is they're losing money, they could have to pay in fines much more than they're losing," she said. "At some point, they have to ask themselves, is what you're standing for worth it?" MDC Board Gets Glimpse of Darkening Jobs Picture by Mella McEwen. Members of the Midland Development Corporation got a glimpse of the economic damage being done by the coronavirus pandemic as it forced an economic shutdown throughout Midland and Odessa. Sarah Harris, the MDC's Director of Operations and Chief Financial Officer, told board members at Monday's board meeting that Midland County unemployment filings had jumped from 75 in March to 1,408 as of April 18th. By comparison, during the same period in 2019, Midland had 46 and 38 unemployment filings, respectively. Ector County saw filings leap from 84 to 1,558 in the same period. For the same period of 2019, Ector County had 64 and 63 filings, respectively. That would put Midland at a 10.6% unemployment rate. Job loss has been more severe than the monthly reports indicate. Wesley Bounds, MDC board chairman, said financial institutions around the country had poured hundreds of billions into impacted businesses through the Small Business Administration. "It would be interesting to know the impact of financial institutions in our area," Permian Regional President for Frost Bank, Bowen, said. "I know through Frost we've done $100 million to those loans at an average of $200,000. We saw it going to small businesses. Take Frost as one institution and think of all the others in town. That's a lot of capital injected into businesses in Midland and Odessa, providing short-term relief until things get moving again." Harris also reported that sales tax collections in April, based on February sales, were down 11% compared to the previous April. "In order to see the current economic impact, we won't get those numbers until May and June based on March and April sales," she said. "The budget still looks positive," she said. "We will have to see how current events impact revenues over the coming weeks." Planning and Zoning Approves Replat for Future Roundabout by Mella McEwen. Planning and Zoning Commissioners on Monday unanimously approved a residential replat of two lots at West Cuthbert and North Garfield Street to lay the groundwork for a planned roundabout at the intersection. The move dedicated some right-of-way for the roundabout and moved existing lot lines as the city swaps corners of property with the property owner. Mike Pacelli, city traffic engineer, explained that both Garfield and Cuthbert actually did not have high enough traffic counts to justify a traffic signal at the intersection, but installing four-way stop signs would be confusing. Following the road bond passage in 2017, when options for rebuilding Garfield Street were discussed, he said the city would have had to rebuild the antiquated traffic signal at a cost of $300,000 above the roadwork cost. Pacelli said many drivers use side streets to avoid the Cuthbert-Garfield intersection. It was decided a roundabout would require less maintenance, offer traffic flow benefits, reduce traffic on the side streets, and enhance the aesthetics of the area. The city already has purchased and demolished two houses at the southwest and the northeast corners for the project. While the project would have higher upfront costs because of the need to acquire properties on the issue of quality of life and community impact, reducing cut-through traffic and the aesthetics of the area, these are factors beyond the actual dollar cost. Road bond funds cannot be used to landscape the roundabout center island, but said private-public partnerships to raise landscaping funds are being explored. The city is preparing to open its first roundabout at Tradewinds Boulevard and Aneta Drive and is in the planning stages of one at Beale Parkway, where Illinois and Thomason Drive intersect. County leaders discuss effectiveness of CHAT, chat, during pandemic, by Stuart Doreen. Midland County officials released the first round of statistics from the County Community Health Assessment Tool, chat. The release shows 983 onboarded subscribers and rates of people showing symptoms from 5.9 on April 10th to 2.1 on April 27th. Last week showed the volatility of the symptom reporting effort, as in 2 days it went from 2.1 on April 27th percent to 4.4% on April 29th. The trend went back down to 3.8% on Friday and 2.5% on 10:45 a.m. Monday. The percentages were calculated using numbers from those people participating on a particular day. For instance, on April 24th, there were 8 yes replies to having symptoms and 357 total replies for a percentage of 2.2%. On April 27th, the number of yes replies was 210 and the number of total replies was 831 for a percentage of 2.1%. The survey also has been expanded since chat's inception. Chat has given us all a glimpse into the health of our community in ways we've never had before, County Judge Terry Johnson wrote. The Reporter-Telegram gave all commissioners the opportunity to answer questions about what does the information tell county officials about what needs to be done in their emergency planning moving forward? What are the positives that any of you have taken from this program? Were there other outcomes expected when the program was approved? Only Johnson and Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey provided responses. Johnson, in his answers, didn't address chat as far as the coronavirus pandemic, but how chat has helped as a notification system in determining what could be done for the future with other United Command teams, as a leadership tool, and getting people in Midland to respond to community-wide concerns. County commissioners last month voted to spend no more than $15,000 on Johnson's chat initiative, a partnership with former Midland City Councilman John James. Johnson also is partnering with James and Commissioner Court planning efforts. The one commissioner to vote against spending money on chat was Ramsey. He reiterated that there was nothing scientific about chat's data and pointed out the subscriber number is 0.4905% sample of our population. A perfect example of how the data could give false and potentially harmful information is what has been referred to as the cedar flu. Ramsey wrote, "In the spring, when the cedar trees bloom, many people with allergies suffer flu-like symptoms." Of course, the chat participants are going to report they have corona-like symptoms when West Texas is notorious for bad seasonal allergies that can mimic COVID-19 symptoms. Therefore, how can this data be trusted to give anybody in Midland County a glimpse into the health of our community? Ramsey also questioned to what extent the hospital schools are using information from the app in their coronavirus information plans moving forward. To my knowledge, not one of those entities has publicly stated they have used this data to alter their public policy decisions when it comes to the COVID-19 crisis. Chat is just another example of what elected officials do to make themselves look good in the public eye while serving no real public purpose. Elected officials love to spend the taxpayers' money on programs that have no reasonable chance at success just so that they can go to the public and say, "Look what we did." Apparently, the Midland County Commissioner's Court is no different. I strongly disagree with the court's decision to move forward with this app. These are serious times in Midland County with the COVID-19 pandemic and the current oil bust. We don't need to spend taxpayer money on feel-good fluff programs. Obituaries and death notices for Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. Dawn Marie Witten Howard. Dawn Marie Witten Howard of Midland passed away on Sunday, May 3rd, 2020, surrounded by her family. Dawn is survived by her loving husband, Randy Howard, sons Kyle Weir, wife Megan, Clay Weir, and Caitlin Steer, Blake Howard, and wife Katie, along with daughters Whitney Hillebrand and husband Ethan and Alex Howard. In memory of Dawn, we ask you to do an act of kindness in her honor, donating to the Brookwood community, 1752 FM 1489 in Brookshire, Texas, 77423, or Home Hospice of Midland at 808 West Missouri Avenue, 79701. A celebration of her amazing life will be planned for 2 p.m. Saturday, September 19th, 2020, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. A live stream of the service can be accessed by going to npwelch.com. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Olivia Ann Elliott Moore. Olivia Ann Elliott Moore, age 68, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, May 2nd, 2020. Olivia is survived by her husband, Joe Moore, son, James Moore, and wife, Jennifer, of Austin, Texas, grandson, Dawson Hansen, of Midland, Texas. Olivia, in lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to the American Cancer Society. The family will receive friends on Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, from 7 to 9 at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, May 6th at 2 p.m. at the Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel, with burial following at Sunset Memorial Gardens. A live stream of the service can be accessed by going to npwelch.com. Peggy Joyce Massey, 87, of Rockwall, Texas, formerly of Midland, passed away on April 25th, 2020, at the Broadmoor Medical Lodge in Rockwall. Peggy is survived by two sons, Rick Massey of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and Guy Massey and his wife Joyce of Heath, Texas. Private services and burial will be held in Kermit, Texas, on April 30th, 2020. Roy Lee Ratliff Sr., born February 16th, 1948. Roy is survived by second wife Cheryl Hopes Ratliff, four children, Kevin Ratliff of Austin, Keith Ratliff of Midland, Roy Ratliff Jr. of Austin, Texas, and Trelicia Ratliff of Arlington. Due to COVID-19, the family has decided to have a memorial service at a later date. The Ratliff family would like to thank everyone. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home. Death notices. Betty Sue Houston Rose, 74, of Midland, passed away May 1st, 2020. The family will receive guests from 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, May 6th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, May 7th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with internment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The funeral service will be live streamed at livestream.com/NPW. Lucinda G. Almaguer passed away May 3rd, 2020. A private service will be held at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Her survivors include Idalive Almaguer Silva, son Christopher Almaguer Kay, one sister and one brother. Arrangements were under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Ronald Curtis Benton, 79, of Midland, passed away on May 2nd. Ronald was born on September 19th, 1940. A viewing will be held Tuesday, May 5th, from 10 to 12 at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Arrangements are with American Heritage Cemetery.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 5th. Bar protest ends in arrests, by Michael Merlo. Armed protesters supporting a local bar owner violating the governor's orders against opening were arrested in West Odessa Monday by law enforcement. Eight of more than 20 people attended a local protest with assistance from Open Texas, a group that has traveled around the state with weapons, trying to help businesses that the governor deemed non-essential reopen their doors. Members of the protest, coming from a rally at Anytime Fitness in Odessa, showed up to Big Daddy Zane's bar at around 5 p.m. Monday with loaded AR-15 type weapons, which they said they did not intend to use, but only had because it represented their Second Amendment rights. They said they carried in defense of the bar's First Amendment rights. Open Texas member and online personal trainer Philip Archibald, 29, was not arrested and said members of the group helped defend a hair salon owner opening in Dallas and an ice house owner in Houston. At around 1 p.m. Friday, Archibald posted a Facebook Live while driving to Odessa, saying that before attending the protest at Big Daddy Zane's, he would be attending a rally at Anytime Fitness, hosted by the owner Clint Gillespie, who previously told the OA in a phone interview that the executive order which prevents his business from opening is unconstitutional. In the Facebook Live, Archibald said, "When we help businesses open up, support them. We get them some revenue and we get them back on their feet. We are only going to reopen the country by empowering people and helping them stand up and getting them back off their knees." He added that the unfortunate thing with the lockdown is that broke a lot of people financially and we got to help them bounce back right now before we all become financially dependent on the government and penniless and a third world country because we ran out of funds, he said. Law enforcement drove behind the bar where owner Gabriel Ellison, 47, had told armed protesters to stand because it was not considered her business property, but it was her private property behind the bar. Multiple ECSO deputies and Texas troopers drove their vehicles, including an armored personnel carrier, behind the bar and pointed guns at the armed protesters, telling them to put their hands up. Those who were carrying guns were handcuffed and transported to the Ector County Detention Center. ECSO Sheriff Mike Griffiths said in a phone interview that six people were arrested for felony unlawfully carrying a weapon on a licensed premises. Ellison was arrested for violation of the governor's order, and one bystander was arrested for interfering with duties of a peace officer. Eight people were arrested in total. Archibald said that those arrested were done so illegally because protesters were arrested on private property. Ellison said that she asked those armed protesters to stay on the private property because of a 51% law, which details that people cannot carry guns into Texas bars. She said that she thought that only applied to inside the bar. Griffiths said that he conferred with TABC, Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission. "We discussed that, and they said any part of that property that is owned or adjacent to, connected to that bar, is the premises, and TABC is going to be fully involved in this deal also," he said. Ellison, the owner of Big Daddy Zane's in Ector County, said in a phone interview earlier on Monday that her business is sinking and her employees are struggling since she's had to close up shop. Ellison said she's been paying her employees with no help from Paycheck Protection Program. "I think some rights were taken away from us, which one of them was like a right to survive. We have to survive, and I think those rights were stripped from us," she said. Ellison said that although they were in protest, some of the restrictions placed on bars, she wanted to make it very clear that she supported the Ector County Sheriff's Department. "Part of Ellison's protest has to do with the inconsistent ways businesses are allowed to reopen," she said. In Ector County, Big Daddy Zane's is surrounded by multiple game rooms that were permitted to open while bars were to remain closed, and she said it's not just about her business, it's about all the bars in the area. Ellison said that before the protest, when she originally asked Odessa Mayor David Turner if she could open, she was told that she could open up at 25% occupancy. But hours after she reopened and had employees back to work serving customers, I got a message that pretty much said, "Whoops, I was corrected." Allison posted via her Facebook that she is doing this for all bartenders, bar owners, customers, family, and friends. She said that she messaged the Open Texas group to tell them that she owned a struggling business and that she needed help, and Archibald messaged back almost immediately. The idea of the group is that all businesses are essential, and the Dallas Morning News reported that Open Texas was created to oppose the government orders telling businesses to stay closed and residents to remain at home due to the coronavirus outbreak. Griffiths said that they took 8 to jail and the investigation will continue. Griffiths will hold a press conference at 10 a.m. today at the Ector County Sheriff's Office. I understand their side of it, he said in a phone interview. Defying the governor's orders is one thing, but when you bring a bunch of armed vigilantes in from other parts of the state for a show of force, I just got a problem with that, he said. Hospital maintains no visitor policy. After Governor Greg Abbott began his plan on Friday to reopen Texas, Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center have stayed grounded in their stance to not allow visitors into their respective hospitals. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said the no visitor policy could be extended through the month due to the coronavirus. We aren't hitting a decline in our cases, Timmons said. We want to be mindful of that as well, knowing that as the community opens, we anticipate seeing some more cases because interactions with each other. As we change our visitation policies, we will make sure to update it. At this point, we are thinking that for the month of May, we are going to stick with the guidelines that we currently have, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan explained during the press conference. The community is still seeing new cases. We're not in the part of the curve where, as a healthcare system, we should take that risk, Saravanan said. Our sense of safety comes from being able to enforce these different precautions that we have to prevent person-to-person risk. A healthcare facility would be one of the worst places for you to transmit that disease. At the very least, in our hospital settings, we will keep this going as long as we need to until we feel there's no significant risk of exposure at the facilities. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said out of 1,305 tests, there were 84 positive cases as of Monday afternoon. 59 people have recovered. There are 76 pending results and 4 deaths. The Ector County drive-through testing also has 1 positive, 27 negative, and 0 pending. The health department received confirmation of 6 new cases Monday, which are Ector County residents, Shelton said. The health department is currently conducting contact tracing to determine if these cases are related or new cases in the community. Shelton also explained the Ector County Sheriff's Office has reopened and fingerprinting has resumed, but there are still no visitors allowed at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Shelton said ECSO is going to wait to receive notice from the Texas Commission on Jail Standards. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said out of 753 tests, 53 were positive. There are 3 patients in-house with 1 on a ventilator. MCH has had 689 negative tests, 11 are pending, and there were no persons under investigation. Earlier Monday, MCH issued a press release that another member of its staff, its 3rd in total, tested positive for COVID-19. Timmons said the last time that woman worked in the building was April 28th. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that out of 303 tests, 14 have been positive, 288 have been negative, and 1 is pending. Brown said the hospital's most recent positive was the first at ORMC in nearly 2 weeks. Saravanan also explained that ethnic minority groups like African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans were added to the CDC testing priorities. even without symptoms, being identified as a high priority for testing by the clinician or public health officials, Sarah Vannon said. Odessa Mayor David Turner said during the press conference that he's hopeful gyms will be able to reopen when Abbott speaks next week. Turner said Abbott has taken the authority away from cities to reopen anything locally, but the city can enforce strict guidelines. Nursing Graduates Eager to Get Going by Ruth Campbell. Graduated but for the ceremony, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center nurses Lauren Cano, Ashley Lindsay, and Brittany Kobos are about to make their way contending with the new world of COVID-19. Cano and Kobos are working in the emergency department at Medical Center Hospital, while Lindsay works in the ER at Midland Memorial. The graduation ceremony for them was supposed to be May 9th. Lindsay said there would be a virtual graduation May 20th, and they have been invited to walk with the summer class August 8th in Lubbock. For Cano, graduating at this time is frustrating, but exciting. She has accepted a position in the ER at MCH as well. "We all wanted to walk the stage," Cano said. "We were so excited about May 8th. We worked so hard to get to this point, but also I find it very interesting because with this pandemic going on, it's really showing us the world of nursing, that we always have to be on our toes. It's constantly changing, it's constantly evolving, and that's what we, at least for me, that's what I like. I like a world where I'm always being challenged and being forced to change. I think that for me is what the world of nursing is. It's about change and being able to move and adapt quickly." Lindsay noted that they get to see the big picture of their chosen profession with the pandemic. "I've already accepted a position as an ER nurse as well, and I'm in the process of transitioning to that position. But I did get to work during this time as well, getting to not only see, but understand it a little bit better," she said. Kobo said she is feeling a whole range of emotions, in part because she had to put school on the back burner for family health reasons. She said missing out on the graduation ceremony is kind of sad, because her family has sacrificed as much as she has. "On the flip side of it, I'm so excited, I'm ready to get to work, and then it's like, yeah, get your test done. Hurry up, get your permit, so we can get you here because I accepted a position there at Medical Center where Lauren is as well." They were like, "We're so ready for you," Kobo said, "but she doesn't have a test date." With a husband who is in the military and two children, Kobo said she has learned all about hurry up and wait. One of her children is in school and the other is not. "For the most part, the nurses aren't feeling nervous for themselves, but for their loved ones. I'm already in the ER and I'm already being exposed to everything. I just feel like I'm at another day of work. I have nerves of being a nurse and being excited and being able to finally put my nursing knowledge and skills to use. But as for being exposed to sickness or other diseases and stuff, I've actually been working in the hospital for almost 3 years now. So I see it as another day of work," Cano said. Lindsay said she's worried about her boyfriend more than herself. "My boyfriend is currently on chemo, so for me it's a bigger concern of taking something home," Lindsay said. "I actually take a change of clothes to work, and I come home in clean clothes. I wipe everything down, take a shower. Anything I touch in the process of that, I clean, and then I'm off for a couple of days. I watch for symptoms and just keep my distance from him." She added that it's been difficult and they are toward the end of his treatment for stage 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma, but she'll have to be careful for some time. "There's only so much that one person can take to be cautious, so I'm just nervous that as this continues to go on, that eventually I'll have missed a step somewhere and I'll have gotten him sick," Lindsay said. All three got into nursing to help people, and out of fascination in Cano's case. There used to be a show way back in the day, like in the 90s, on TLC, where you could actually watch surgeries. And me and my dad would just sit and watch surgeries for hours. And I even told him as a child that my calling, I knew God's calling for me, was to be a light and to spread the word of God. So as I got older, I just really pursued the medical field, Cano said. I was a dental assistant for a few years, but when I left being a dental assistant, I was actually in a head-on collision, and I've had two hand surgeries. I went through the process of being picked up by EMS, to being treated in the ER, to clinic, to the OR, to post-op, and got to see all these different facets of nursing. I was like, oh my God, I love this. Cano said she tended to get bored with jobs about every 2 years. I was constantly changing and looking for something that challenged me, and I never felt like I was being challenged enough in life, she said. When she got into the field as a certified nursing assistant, she knew it was perfect for her and that she was fulfilling her calling to reach as many people as she could by caring for them, being a light, and being compassionate. The ER has actually scared me to be a nurse for many years. But after I was a patient and saw how great my nurses were, I was like, no, this is perfect. I find it ironic that the thing that scared me the most is what I'm the most passionate about, Cano said. Lindsay said she didn't originally want to be a nurse. She started off wanting to be a teacher for special needs children, but paused for personal reasons. Then she realized that it wasn't for her. But then I decided I really love working with people, Lindsay said. I've always been a compassionate person and have the ability to really see a situation. And instead of freaking out, just slowing down and saying, okay, what needs to be taken care of here? Which is why I chose to do ER. Because obviously trauma comes in, and you need to be able to slow down, assess the situation, and do what you need to do. Once she became a certified nursing assistant, it became an instant passion for her. Her ultimate goal is to be a flight nurse. Like Cano and Lindsay, Kobo said she always has enjoyed helping people and loved children and wanted to be a mother. She wrote a paper in second grade about wanting to become a pediatric surgeon or nurse, something she still wants to do. Having children put her back 10 years from going to nursing school, so she went to massage school instead and made that her profession for 12 years. She got her nursing license in 2011, but that was the year her son was born, and she wasn't going to leave him to work. So here I am, 10 years later, graduating from nursing school. I just thought it was a dream everybody dreams of doing their dream job, and a lot of people don't get to. I'm like, man, everybody has sacrificed so much. My dream is reality now, so I'm not really nervous. I'm excited to finally do what I was put here to do, fulfill my purpose, feel like I have a purpose outside my home. I love my family, I love my kids, I want to keep them safe, Kobos said. She, too, is changing clothes before she comes home. Their hopes are that this will bring people together, bring families closer, and help people remember to do simple things like wash their hands. Cano said she was homeschooled from kindergarten through her senior year of high school, so self-quarantine was her normal. Her hope is that families struggling with homeschooling their children will reach out to homeschool families to ask for advice on how they do things, giving them a chance to open up that line of communication. I guess it would be better to understand the importance of the little things like washing your hands and coughing in your elbow, things that we know but don't practice, Lindsay said. I think that if people realize the flu is contracted the same way that COVID is, we could see a reduction in flu cases if they could even be careful during the season. In our hospital, we've noticed a big decrease in pretty much any type of illness right now. I contribute that to, well, for one, the kids not being in school and spreading everything around. But also we're making better choices, we're exercising, we're cooking at home more, we're just being more active, and I think that it just speaks volumes. I'm making those little changes, and even though it was somewhat forced on us, we are a healthier community. I think that's an important note to try and remind people of, she said. Kobo said it comes down to thinking about what you're fighting off by washing your hands for 20 seconds. And even when this is over and the 6 feet of social distancing isn't necessary, it might be good to keep space between people so someone doesn't cough all over you. People are afraid to go to the hospital, so what are they doing? They're taking that first line of defense, washing their hands, keeping your distance, teaching proper cough etiquette. What does that mean? Don't cough all over people, Kobos said. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 84. Ector County negative 1,145 out of 1,305 tested, with 76 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County, 89 confirmed out of 1,781 tested, 5 deaths. Texas, 32,332 confirmed, with 407,398 tested. Total Texas deaths, 884. U.S. cases, 1,152,372 total confirmed and 67,456 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. MCH benefit. The Kendra Scott of Midland will be donating a portion of their sales to Medical Center Health System for COVID-19 relief through May 10th. 100% of all proceeds from the State of Texas Charm and 20% of all proceeds from Midland curbside and in-store appointment purchases will benefit MCHS. In addition, as a special thank you during Nurses Week, nurses will receive a 20% discount if they shop between May 4th and May 6th. As always, nurses receive a 15% discount year-round. Customers can make their purchases at Kendra Scott, that's KendraScott.com, which will then give instructions on how to pick up their items at curbside. The Kendra Scott location in Midland can be found at the Commons at North Park off of Loop 250. Live stream graduations. Graduation ceremonies for Ector County ISD's Class of 2020 will be virtual this year, but they will contain some of the same elements students would have experienced in a face-to-face event. Dates for the graduations are May 22nd and May 23rd, and they will be broadcast at the same time they would actually have been held, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Permian is on May 22nd and Odessa High School is May 23rd. The graduations would be live if not for coronavirus. The one for Odessa Collegiate Academy is at 10 a.m. May 22nd. The one for OC Techs at noon May 22nd. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa at 2 p.m. May 22nd and PHS at 8:30 p.m. May 22nd. Odessa High School's graduation will be at 8:30 p.m. May 23rd. City wants input. The City of Odessa Community Development Department receives 2 grants annually from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnership Program. The primary objective of these programs is to develop viable communities by providing decent housing, a suitable living environment, and expanding economic opportunities for persons of low and moderate income. To prepare the 5-year 2020 to 2024 consolidated plan and the 1-year 2020 action plan, the 2020 to 2024 consolidated plan survey is now available directly on the City of Odessa's home website. The Community Development Department is asking for citizen input on 2 separate topics for 2 vital purposes. to identify the needs of our community and develop 5-year goals and strategies to address those needs. Complete an analysis of impediments to fair housing within the community. It is important that citizens and organizations participate in this survey process to assist the City of Odessa in identifying the needs within the community. Let officials know where these funds should be allocated. If you feel there are additional needs for low and moderate income residents that are not referenced to, please list them in the comments box at the end of the survey. Teenager charged with robbing 2 gas stations at gunpoint. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly robbed 2 gas stations at gunpoint. Joe Ortiz, 17, was charged with aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon, a first-degree felony. The first reported robbery happened March 26th at the Stripes located at 3210 West 16th Street, while the second occurred March 27th at the Quick Track located at 16th Street and Harless Avenue. Ortiz reportedly entered the Stripes and pointed a black handgun and demanded the money from the cash registers. Ortiz was reportedly wearing a black hoodie sweater, green bandana over his face, black shorts, and white shoes. Ortiz was seen on surveillance video committing the same robbery at Quick Track with another person. During this robbery, a vehicle was stolen and later recovered after a pursuit by police. Patrick Elizondo, 18, reportedly evaded with a stolen vehicle and was arrested. Ortiz and Elizondo were arrested April 1st after they reportedly robbed a liquor store in northwest Odessa. The reported robbery happened at 7:13 p.m., March 26th, at CC's Liquor located at 6918 North County Road West. Ortiz was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center in April, and he was one bond totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Monday morning. Elizondo remains in custody with 3 bonds totaling $175,000. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 5th. Elton E. Brownlee went home to be with his Lord and Savior on May 1st in Midland. Elton was born July 5, 1930, to Charles Rush Brownlee Sr. and Tessie Alma Golden in De Leon, Texas. Elton is preceded in death by his wife, Jerry Brownlee, and his wife, Donnie Brownlee. Surviving Elton are his children, Sherry Murray and husband Bob, Brian Brownlee and wife Barbara, and Sherman Brownlee, all of Odessa. Stepchildren Mike Hare and wife Dottie of De Leon, Tim Hare and wife Kim of Dublin, Texas, Toby Hare and wife Lisa of De Leon, brother C.R. Brownlee and wife Bobby of Granbury. 7 grandchildren, 6 step-grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 6th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Pastor Jess Little officiating. Sunset Memorial Gardens will be following Governor Greg Abbott's Executive Order GA08 and the CDC's mandated guidelines, and will be limiting the number of people gathered to 10 immediate family at the graveside. Others are welcome to stay in their vehicles, as the service will be transmitted live on 104.9 FM. Memorial contributions may be made to De Leon First Baptist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Olivia Ann Elliott Moore, age 68, of Midland, passed away Saturday, May 2nd, from a traumatic head injury. She was born May 29, 1951, in Hobbs, New Mexico, to John and Gladys Belcher Elliott. Olivia is survived by her husband, Joe Moore, who loved her dearly. son James Moore and wife Jennifer of Austin. One grandson, two granddaughters. Sister Cynthia Peters of McCamey, many nieces and nephews. Olivia is preceded in death by her daughter, Tamara Hansen, first husband David Evans, her parents, her in-laws, Birch and Margaret Moore, her in-laws, Cecil and Frida Evans. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to the American Cancer Society. The family will receive friends on Tuesday, May 5th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, May 6th at 2 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel, with burial following at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Event will be live streamed at www.livestream.com/NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Betty Sue Houston Rose, 74, of Midland, died Friday, May 1st in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. May 7th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. The funeral service will be live streamed at www.livestream.com/NPW. Visitation will be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, May 6th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Burial will follow the service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Soledad Ramirez Aguilar, 86, of Presidio, died Saturday, May 2nd, in Andrews. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Ronald Curtis Benton, 79, of Midland, died Saturday, May 2nd, in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. David Hernandez, 69, died Sunday, May 3rd, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.